The latest trends in childbirth. Expectant mothers and fathers have lots to think about when planning for the arrival of a child, including, of course, the delivery. There are multiple options, from home births to birthing centers to hospitals, each with its benefits and risks. Today on the program, we'll explore all of these options and answer your questions. What types of births are considered high risk? How are they assessed? What roles do midwives and other birthing specialists play in Maine today? How does Maine regulate them? The issue is highly charged, with some strong opinions all around. I'm Keith Shortall, and joining me today is a panel of experts who are helping mothers deliver babies every day. We'll hear about the latest developments in practice and about how to choose the best and safest option for you and your baby. All about childbirth in Maine. There was a time when my grandmother had her children, when women had very few options for how and where their deliveries were done. By the middle of the 20th century, most births took place in hospitals. The movement back to natural childbirth followed in the mid to late 1900s, the 60s and 70s. On this Maine Calling, we'll learn about the different delivery options along with the benefits and the potential risks and a whole host of other areas of discussion around childbirth and neonatal care. With me in the studio, Dr. Doreen Morrow. She's an attending neonatologist at Maine Medical Center. Also in our Portland studio today, Dr. Jay Nalaboff. He's an OBGYN practice at Franklin Memorial Hospital in Farmington. And joining us from our Bangor studio, Jill Breen. She's a certified professional midwife and certified lactation counselor. We invite you, as always, to join the conversation. Would you consider a home birth? What about a water birth? We'll have a heated discussion, I'm sure, about this. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566, our email address, talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Maine Calling Facebook page. First of all, welcome all three of you to Maine Calling today.
Thanks.
Thank you, Keith.
There's a lot to get to, and we don't, as I said before coming to air, want to focus on just this debate about home birth versus a hospital, though we do want to explore the risks. But in the news today is this study by the CDC, a report coming out finding that giving birth in a hospital is considerably safer, as one story reports it, than having a baby at home or a birthing center. There's a lot of analysis about how that study was done, but the takeaway message is that babies delivered by midwives at home had nearly four times the risk for death compared with those delivered by hospital-based midwives. I don't know if any of you have seen this study or the reports about it, but let me just get your initial reaction, Dr. Nalaboff.
I haven't seen that study yet today. It is consistent with the study that Dr. Wax from Maine Med published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology. His finding was that there was a threefold increase in neonatal death for home birth. And this was a study that it's called a meta-analysis. It looked at multiple studies from various countries. So it's consistent.
Yeah. Jill Breen, you're a certified professional midwife. When you hear these stories, see these studies, see these kinds of headlines, what's your response?
I have not seen that study, Keith, I'm sorry to say, but since the WAC study came out, there have been two very large studies, and sort of the first of their kind. The American Association of Birth Centers last year published a very big study about the outcomes from birth centers that primarily are staffed by certified nurse midwives, certified midwives, and certified professional midwives. And just this year, the MANA Stats study came out, which is the biggest study ever done on home birth in the United States, with about 17,000 cases. Certainly, the results from those studies, which are very specific about intended place of birth and place of birth and type of practitioner is the result of research, not just vital stats data. So vital stats data can be misleading when you're trying to determine risk because of the fact that most birth certificates, for example, do not indicate what the intended place of birth was or what the type of provider was. And there are a lot of other the CDC's own epidemiologist, Marion McDormand, has said that vital stats data really can't be used to assess absolute risk. And in fact, the only thing that we can really say is that bad outcomes are extremely rare.
Right. Doctor, did you want to continue?
Sure, Jill. I think you can agree that all studies have strengths and weaknesses. And the strength of the study that you mentioned last was that it was a voluntary study. So not every home delivery provider participated, and whether you participated or not was totally voluntary. I think that that's a limitation which is at least as significant as a vital statistics study.
And I know studies, I've seen them or report on them all the time. It all depends on what questions you ask and all of these other statistical issues. So it's difficult to you can have battling statistics and battling studies, certainly. But Dr. Morrow, is there any case to be made that there are circumstances where a home birth, if there's determined to be no real risk to baby or mother, is fine?
I know that there are places in the world where home births are done under very strict guidelines and with appropriate personnel appropriately trained for the proper resuscitation of a baby should they need that. The American Academy of Pediatrics has come out with a statement with respect to home births. I think it's important that we respect a woman's right to make a decision on her own of where, in fact, she wants to deliver. But I think that, as we always say, good decisions are made with good information. And I think that the information that's crucial that a woman has when she makes this kind of decision is when, what are the situations in which this is a potentially important, safe thing to do? Who must be present? What is their training? What is their experience? And is there someone who will be able to take care of the mother and to be able to take care of a baby should an unexpected event occur? That time when a baby's born is so very important, and I know that everyone wants healthy moms and healthy babies. And that golden hour around the time when a baby's born means so much in terms of that baby's entire life. And you quoted the death rate is 4 times higher, but I think that more important, as we say in the medical field, there are many things worse than death. And I think that that's a very important, really important thing for people to take into account, that the opportunity for a baby who's in trouble to be properly resuscitated and to have a perfectly fine or the best they could possibly have outcome occurs best in a situation where people who are appropriately trained and appropriately skilled in the resuscitation of those babies. So are there situations in which home birth is potentially safe? Yes, but with good information, good decisions are made, and the proper people with the proper knowledge and the proper experience need to be present. And the identification of who are those women who are appropriate.
Yeah, and I want to talk more about some of the issues that can arise at birth for mother and baby and talk about that in this segment. But Jill Breen, I'll give you a chance to respond, but also to point out that in doing prep for this show, I was kind of surprised when I learned that that while the home birth rate is increasing in the United States over the last decade or so for various reasons, that it's still incredibly small. It's still just over 1% of all births. And that was of surprise to many of us in the newsroom. I think we assumed it was higher. What's your take on why it's still relatively at over 1%, still so low?
Well, as you said, we're certainly seeing a dramatic rise in home birth in this country. It's risen over 20%. In Maine, it's risen over 50%. Now, that sounds big, but when you look at the numbers of babies, we're talking about 1.5% in Maine. To be specific, 240 babies in the year 2013 were actually born at home in Maine. Maine happens to be one of the states where there's a really dramatic increase. There are many states that have a lot more home births than Maine, such as our nearest neighbors, New Hampshire and Vermont, and of course, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, New Mexico, et cetera. So Texas. I think, as you say, the rates are low and the risks are low. Midwives are certainly trained to, take care of babies and mothers. And midwives are professionals that are actively risking at every step of the way. So throughout prenatal care, throughout labor, we are actively looking for any problems that may be developing, and we're always assessing the baby's position, listening to the baby's heart rate and pattern, determining the well-being of the mother during this period. All of that is an ongoing process that as soon as any kind of a problem starts to show, it would precipitate a discussion and a decision made to transfer to hospital if need be, to consult if need be. So throughout this process, I have to say that, this is a pretty rigorous standard that has been developed for home birth midwives through the efforts of midwives. When I was having my first home birth in 1970, there weren't any midwives to help me out. By the time I was having my fourth home birth in 1980, I was a midwife, and from that time forward, I was part of a nationwide effort to establish the core competencies and develop training and testing. And in 1994, the first certified professional midwife was credentialed.
Now, midwives in Maine.
Since that time, over 2,200 certified professional midwives in the United States have been credentialed.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you there. So,
no problem.
So certified, in Maine, midwives are certified. They aren't licensed. Can you explain how Maine's law differs from other states?
Well, as you know, we have 50 different laws in this country. Regulation is done state by state, and we already have 27 states that have licensure based on the CPM credential. All licensed midwives pretty much in the United States, whether they're CPMs or not, actually take the CPM exam as part of their licensure. Maine has a really unique law. There is some interest in licensing midwives in Maine, and there was an attempt in 2006 to do that. We, in fact, wound up with a very unique law once it went through the legislative process that does give us access to a small number of medications for mother and newborn, such as Pitocin to treat hemorrhoids, oxygen, eye ointment for the baby, that type of thing. I think that that needs to be expanded. It is the only law of its kind in the United States that allows that access without licensure.
Dr. Morrow, we're going to a break here in a couple of minutes, but I want to start talking about the medical issues that can arise that represent the risk involved for children in a birth situation. What are some of the things that concern you in a home birth setting that are better dealt with at a hospital?
Well, I mean, there's a laundry list. You know, again, I don't disagree with Jill that I do think that for the majority of women that the birthing process is a natural thing, and that the less we intervene, the better it is. And I think that's important that despite the fact that I'm a neonatologist, which means that I deal with a great deal of modern technology, that I also believe that less is more. I think that there are a lot of things that can happen around the time of delivery. I've been in practice for over 35 years, and I'm still surprised and shocked sometimes with things that happen, but that having the people and the resources available for situations that were not anticipated and having them two steps away rather than a phone call and longer.
Could you give an example just so we can understand? I realize there are many of these, but just one.
I don't want to violate any HIPAA laws. For example, a cord avulsion, which means that the umbilical cord has pulled off from the placenta and the baby can, in fact, bleed out, or there can be a fetal maternal hemorrhage. That if a baby loses a tremendous amount of blood just prior to the time of delivery, the resuscitation of that baby does not require just a respiratory resuscitation, helping that baby breathe, but that baby needs to be volume resuscitated, being given IV fluids, and also may need to have a blood transfusion immediately. The longer you wait, the greater the likelihood that that baby will have brain damage and multiple organ damage. The number that's given in the pediatric literature for home deliveries is that when there's greater than 20 minutes until the infant reaches emergency care, that the outcomes are much worse. So there's an example of blood loss, and there's many ways in which there can be blood loss that was not anticipated. Velamentous insertion of the cord, a cord avulsion. If you have a cord prolapse, a baby may be asphyxiated, and the resuscitation of a baby might be successful, but someone who is not commonly caring for newborns and might not recognize the signs and symptoms of a baby who's in trouble. And these days we have the ability to intervene in these babies sooner rather than later to optimize their outcome. Doesn't mean that they're always going to be 100% fine, but we can, for example, in a baby who's been asphyxiated, many of those babies may be candidates for hypothermia treatment, which has been shown to improve babies' outcomes, especially in those babies who are moderately mild to moderately asphyxiated. And recognition of the problem and the earlier it's recognized is very important.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll let Jill respond. We'll go to our other guests on the panel, and we'll take your calls as well, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. Stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Sweetser, seeking mentors for children with mental and behavioral health needs. Learn more at sweetser.org. And Dean Wealth Advisors, independent investment advice to individuals, families, and institutions. Dean.com.
Hey, it's us, Click and Clack from Car Talk. You ready for a little automotive spring cleaning?
Yeah, my car could use it.
Good. I brought 15 flea bombs.
That's a start.
If your car's seen one spring too many, you can donate it to this station. It'll get sold, your station gets the proceeds,
and you get a tax deduction.
For more information, visit mpbn.net and click on the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program button in the top left corner. MPBN is hiring. We are seeking an energetic individual with an appreciation for public radio and television in Maine to join our underwriting sales team. The successful candidate will have a minimum of 3 years' experience in advertising, sales, marketing, or fundraising, and have a proven knowledge of the business landscape in Maine and New England. Based in Portland, the selected candidate will work with businesses, nonprofits, and foundations to secure underwriting support for MPBN radio and television, as well as advertising on mpbn.net and in Experience magazine. To learn more about the underwriting sales position and details on how to apply, please visit mpbn.net.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, childbirth options. With me in our Portland studio, Dr. Doreen Morrow, an attending neonatologist at Maine Medical Center, and Dr. Jay Nalaboff, a OBGYN who practices at Franklin Memorial Hospital in Farmington. Joining us from our Bangor studio is Jill Breen, a certified professional midwife and certified lactation counselor. And of course, we invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Before the break, we were talking about some of the complications that can arise during a delivery. I want to give Jill Breen, our midwife, a chance to respond to that, but also Dr. Nalaboff. Is there anything you want to add to that?
Now, I would say that probably the most common unexpected complication at the time of delivery is shoulder dystocia, where the head delivers, the shoulders get stuck, and there are a number of maneuvers required to free the baby, but often the baby requires some resuscitation. And again, unless you're prepared, unless you have the proper personnel there, you only get one shot at it.
Jill Breen, you've been hearing what's been said about the need for a quick resuscitation by a skilled person. How do you respond to that?
Well, my response is that midwives are extremely skilled and experienced, and we do maintain our certification in neonatal resuscitation. I think it's really important to realize that in my practice, I have two midwives at every birth, one for the mom and one for the baby once the baby is born. The baby is getting careful assessment throughout those first hours. I can't personally imagine not recognizing that the baby was having a problem of any kind. I mean, that is obviously part of my training, and I've been, you know, working with babies and newborns for 36 years. So I do have, I think, the wherewithal to give the baby immediate care and also to get the baby more definitive care if that need arises. We've been focusing on, you know, on what problems could arise. But, you know, if you come back to what does happen at a home birth is that immediate attention to the baby and the mother, immediate, you know, the way that mothers and babies interact immediately after birth with the skin-to-skin contact with the baby, discovering the breast. All of these things are happening while we are assessing both mother and baby throughout. And I think that it's really important to realize that, you know, birth is a very personal experience. Certainly, you know, one size does not fit all. We could certainly also focus on changing, you know, or sort of improving hospital experience so that people are able to have a little bit more personal and intimate experience. But the fact of the matter is that more and more women and families are choosing home birth. It's my job to make sure that it is as safe as possible.
And Jill, sorry to interrupt.
And I'm sure that Jay, I'm sure that Dr. Nalaboff and Dr. Morrow would agree that, you know, giving women who choose home birth access to a full spectrum of care, smooth transition from, you know, one site to another is critical to that safety.
And I think we can also agree that it's possible in the hospital to respect the couple's wishes, to make that experience as unique as possible. We certainly in our hospital believe in delayed cord clamping, immediate skin-to-skin contact. The father almost always cuts the cord, immediate breastfeeding. I mean, I don't think you have to take that away from a hospital delivery. We certainly, virtually all of our patients have birth plans that we try to adhere to. Really, the decision-making is by the couple.
I want to bring in phones as quickly as we can. We'll go to Orion and Damariscotta in one second. But we don't have this argument around, you know, knee replacements. Nobody wants to have their knee replaced at home. So this is clearly a personal experience that is also very much tied up in the need for medical care. It is not a procedure as many of these other things are.
I think it's important to also mention that, again, speaking from the much more technical and much more interventional end of childbirth, which is very different than what most of Dr. Nalaboff and Jill are talking about, we too try very, very hard to remember that even a baby who we know is being delivered with multiple anomalies, with life-threatening anomalies, how very important it is that we celebrate the life and birth of that child with the family, that we never leave the delivery room with a baby who's going to be coming to the intensive care unit without allowing that baby to be touched and, if possibly, held and put skin to skin with the mother. We try very much. We recognize how very important those things are. And I think Jill's point of that, we need to recognize in the hospital setting how important it is. And I think we do have a better understanding and a much better appreciation for how important those things are. So we still, at cesarean sections, when a dad is not able to cut the cord, we actually have him come over and to the warmer table and trim a baby's cord. We take photographs. We take videos. We do our very best to make sure that in a situation when we know there's going to be problems, or we know that we're going to need to intervene right from the very beginning, to have the family involved as much as possible to make what is not the experience that they might have been planning for, one that is as rewarding and joyful as it possibly can be. And I think that it's really important that people are aware of the fact that our job is not to separate mom and baby. Our job is to make sure that both mom and baby are well cared for and that the entire family unit gets to celebrate that birth.
Okay, let's go to the phones now. Molly in South Thomaston will go to you in a moment, but first to Damariscotta and Orion. Hi, Orion. Is it Orion?
Yes, Orion.
Okay, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Keith, for having me on. I'm a big fan of Maine Calling.
Thank you.
But I have to say I'm a little disappointed at how you started the show off.
I knew that you would.
The infant mortality rate and maternal mortality rate in the U.S. compared to the rest of the world, and that includes in-hospital births. In talking about birth in general, starting off saying that home birth is, there's a study that says home birth kills more babies and that all the things that can go wrong at home trying to.
Well, I was citing a recent study. Go ahead. Sorry.
And you know, let's talk about birth here in this country. You know, it's in a crisis. Why do we spend so much money on it and have so poor outcomes? You know, what there are. Yeah, I don't want to hear about, you know, midwives versus hospitals. I want to talk about what is the big picture that's happening here. Why can't we do better as a country in providing safety and choice?
Yeah.
And people are choosing to have birth at home. I was born at home. My daughter was born at home, and having laws like in Maine allowing people who have birth at home to have access to drugs that they may need if they choose to do that, and expanding that is important. And these other countries that have better infant mortality rates than the U.S. have midwives involved in the process and prenatal care, not just you're having a baby and you run.
Ryan, we lost you. Sorry.
You know, the reason for the difference in birth statistics and survival in the United States has to do with socioeconomic disparity. It doesn't have to do with home birth. It doesn't have to do with hospital birth. It has to do with the huge number of people who have no access to care, can't afford care, or have substandard care. And that's a societal problem that we're not going to solve either at home or in the hospital.
Yeah. Jill Breen? Did you want to respond?
I do think it's a national crisis, and I do think that, you know, midwives fill that void of giving people access to primary care. I don't agree that it's all based on socioeconomic conditions. That does not explain why the U.S. ranks 50th in maternal mortality globally, which means that we have worse outcomes than some third world countries. Obviously, a lot of places are not using the technology we're using. They're not spending the amount of money we're spending on maternity care, and yet they're getting better outcomes. We really need to look at it and not, you know, if you look at the work of Eugene de Klerk, who is a phenomenal epidemiologist and researcher and professor, you know, he's been looking at this for a number of years as to what is causing high C-sections rates, what is causing maternal death rates, neonatal rates. It's from what he sees, he cannot find a reason that is corresponding to women's inability to birth or women changing or different, you know. We can get prenatal care. If we spend more money on social programs and providing care to people, we can take care of that. The point is that the U.S. has to buckle down and do it.
All right, let's let the other guests respond, and then I want to move to another
call.
Yeah,
we had this discussion last night, you know, Jill, but my daughter's an OBGYN resident in Camden, New Jersey, and her patient population is terrible health problems, has substance abuse problems, has terrible socioeconomic conditions, and, of course, has a higher mortality rate. I think until you address those disparity problems, you're not going to address the maternal and infant mortality in the U.S.
Dr. Morrow, briefly.
I agree.
I couldn't agree more. You know, amazingly, if you looked at the socioeconomic status of the babies that we care for on our NICU here in Maine, I can't tell you the exact number, but the majority of them come from lower socioeconomic status where their mothers have not had good care, where they're they have drug and other problems that contribute to their overall well-being.
Is obesity an issue?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let's go to South Thomaston and Molly. Hi, Molly. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Hi. I'm glad to hear the conversation shift. Having just become a new mother almost 7 months ago of a very healthy, happy little boy.
Congratulations.
Nice.
It's really frustrating being an expectant mother and then a current mother in this society. Clearly, childbirth and, you know, children is a hugely profound and emotional topic, but it's extremely frustrating for the parents, the expectant parents and then current parents, to deal with the conversation of, or the argument of home birth versus hospital birth. And it seems like everyone has an opinion and you're always wrong, no matter which direction you choose. And so I'd really like to see us get over it, essentially, and just as long as the parents have made an informed decision, you know, step back and say, I'm not giving birth.
Right now,
I made my choice with my birth, and you can make your choice with your birth, and that is A-okay.
You know, Jill and I have known each other for 30 years, and our common goal is healthy mother and healthy baby. And I also believe strongly in the autonomy of a woman and her partner to make the choice about where they deliver. We see in our practice, we have a policy that if someone plans to deliver at home, we welcome them into our practice. We see them as if they were our patient. We do tell them our feelings about home delivery, which is that we believe that hospital delivery is safer. But all the way along the line, we do the testing, we do the ultrasounds, we welcome them. If they decide, their medical record information is theirs. They own the information, and so they can transfer that information to whomever they wish. If they need to come to the hospital to deliver, at least they've met us. We have some relationship and some trust established. But I strongly believe that women and their partners can decide wherever they want to deliver.
Molly, we went through the same thing with both of our kids were C-sections. They were breech. And my wife still talks about you know, getting funny looks when she talked about having her C-sections, even though we really had no choice in the matter. So we understand that. We also, however, understand that we have to take a short break. And when we come back, more of your comments and questions. The number, 800-399-356. That's 800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Silly's in Portland's East End. Open at 11 Tuesday through Friday and at 9 for brunch on the weekends with vegan and gluten-free options. Silly's.com. And Baxter Brewing Company in Lewiston, introducing Tarnation California-style lager, a new year-round brew in cans and on draft. BaxterBrewing.com.
On the next Fresh Air, Edie Falco, the star of the Showtime series Nurse Jackie, in which she plays an ER nurse addicted to drugs. The new season starts Sunday. Falco also starred in The Sopranos as Carmela Soprano. We'll talk about her roles and about her own experiences with sobriety and breast cancer. Join us.
That's coming up tonight on Fresh Air at 7 o'clock. Join MPBN on Facebook and over 12,000 friends of MPBN for notes about special programming and events, questions for you and from you about our television, radio, and online programming and services, conversations with other listeners who may not always have the same opinion as you, also schedule updates, information, and news about MPBN. We invite you to become an MPBN Facebook friend and connect with other listeners and viewers. If you like MPBN On Air, like us on Facebook, too.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Options for Childbirth. With me in the studio, Dr. Doreen Morrow. She's an attending neonatologist at Maine Medical Center. Dr. Jay Nalaboff is an OBGYN. He practices at Franklin Memorial Hospital in Farmington. And joining us from our Bangor studio, Jill Breen, a certified professional midwife and certified lactation counselor. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566. Let's go to Bangor and Diana. Hi, Diana.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead, please.
My question is mainly for Jill. I know many women, I work as a doula, and I know many women who are anxious, I guess to say, about giving birth in a hospital, but they don't quite feel comfortable having a home birth either. And especially in Bangor, we only have the one hospital that does birth. So we don't really have a lot of competition, and there's not really a lot of drive to build a birthing center. But does she anticipate any kind of change in that or any kind of middle ground for these women who just don't feel comfortable in either place?
All right, Diana, thanks. Jill?
Well, I think what you're doing, Diana, is a perfect example of how you can help women who are not comfortable with home birth but want to make the hospital experience the best that it can be and the closest to what they want. And certainly being a doula, having a doula in hospital, I think is extremely valuable. And it's already showing that it can definitely impact, you know, rates of cesarean, length of labors, you know, satisfaction with birth. So I think you're on the right track there. I'm disappointed, too, that there is not more birth center options. In the last 30 years, we've gone through a number of birth centers in Maine, and each one of them has eventually closed. We do have one now in Bridgeton, which is doing well. And I'm hoping that with the number of certified professional midwives and a number of certified nurse midwives in Maine that are interested in establishing or working in birth centers, that eventually we're going to get there. I know that we have some new CPMs that are very interested in the Waterville area to establish a birth center. So I'm hoping that we women in Maine will have more options. I just want to give a shout out. This is Cesarean Awareness Month. You can check out my blog post on mana.org, which should be coming out tonight or tomorrow morning.
Okay, thanks.
And I think need to, you know, it reminded me, Keith, when you mentioned the two cesareans that you and your wife experienced, that, you know, this month is an excellent opportunity to sort of become more aware, become more educated about preventing primary C-sections, lowering the C-section rate, improving access to vaginal birth after cesarean, all of those things, you know, talk about what may be leading to more C-sections and how we can, and also how we can improve the experience for women that do have cesareans, as Dr. Mara was talking about, you know, having that opportunity to touch the baby, have skin-to-skin contact, you know, as much as possible during that experience.
Dr. Morrow.
Jill, do you think that breech deliveries at home are a safe option? I mean, I think breech deliveries these days in hospital are not safe options.
I'm sort of disappointed in the way things have gone in the last 30 years. Certainly when I started practice, there were many very experienced physicians in Maine that were comfortable doing breech births vaginally. I have not seen a lot of evidence about the C-sections when you take the safety and of the mother and baby together being more safe than of vaginal birth with a breech that is in a good position for breech, you know, vaginal delivery with a skilled provider. I mean, those are all elements that you need in order to have a safe vaginal breech delivery.
Jill, I can't see you, but I suspect that we both have the same hair color.
a little bit, yes. Yeah, just a tad.
We're talking about a time when physicians did, in fact, do vaginal breech deliveries. Yes. And I can tell you, and I could name the physicians here in Southern Maine who were quite facile with it. And I was always very happy to be in a delivery room where there was a vaginal birth that they had to do. But the problem, and we haven't alluded to this issue at all in our conversation, and so let me raise its dirty little head, but the reason that we've come to so many cesarean sections for babies who are breech, and the reason that the current younger generation of obstetricians don't know how to deliver babies as a vaginal breech is a result of the malpractice situation in the United States. And so, I totally agree with you that there are situations in very competent and well-experienced hands where a vaginal breech delivery is a very safe thing. However, that has changed tremendously, and there is a dying breed of dinosaur obstetricians who are still able to do this. But the current generation does not have the experience to do that.
Right, and we can compare names later. But I agree that the malpractice insurance is definitely a liability for hospitals and physicians. is really a tough issue for them, and it certainly has impacted the access to vaginal birth after cesareans.
You know, my
dinosaur.
Women.
I mean,
Dr. Dinosaur Jay.
My hair is the same color, and not only that, but I'm a male obstetrician, which so I'm a double fossil. But, you know, and I actually trained doing vaginal breech deliveries, Piper forceps and all. There are a couple things. One is that there was a large prospective Scandinavian study about vaginal breech deliveries, And that study showed, and I think it was sort of the death knell of elective vaginal breech deliveries, that no matter how skilled you were, no matter what facility you delivered in, there was an excess of neonatal deaths in vaginal breeches. And the reason for that is that when the baby comes head first, the head's the largest part of a baby, head comes out, you figure the rest will come out. But when a baby is born breech, successively larger parts of the baby are born. And so you're never quite sure that the head's going to come out until it does. And the maneuvers, actually, when you're doing a cesarean in terms of delivering a breech, are the same as the vaginal delivery, but you can always enlarge the incision.
I want to get to a few more calls, if we can, to Callis and Nancy. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
I came in a little bit late into listening to the program, but I'm not sure that you have included the option of certified nurse midwife.
Yeah, Jill, sorry.
I am a certified nurse midwife, uh-huh. And we have many, many certified nurse midwives throughout the entire state now. And there is a difference between a certified nurse midwife and a CPM. And I'm surprised you have not invited a certified nurse midwife to be on your panel.
Well, we had limited seating, but Jill, can you speak to the difference between a certified nurse midwife and certified
Absolutely.
Midwife?
There are several different kinds of midwives. As I started to talk about the CPMs in this country, and then there's also licensed midwives who are not necessarily CPMs, depending on the state they live in. The certified nurse midwife is, of course, a midwife who is a nurse and has gone through the American College of Nurse Midwifery program to become a nurse midwife. My son's fiance is actually in one of those programs right now, so I'm very excited to have another midwife in the family. For the most part, you know, nurse midwives don't necessarily do home births. I don't know if there are any in Maine. There used to be. If there are, there's probably maybe one or two that are still doing home births. So I think that may be one reason why we didn't have a nurse midwife on the program. But I don't know, since I wasn't involved in that. But I do think that nurse midwifery services in hospitals and birthing centers are extremely important in providing that balance, that sort of non-interventive approach in the hospital, more personalized, you know, staying with the mother and baby throughout the labor and immediate postpartum. So I applaud, you know, all different kinds of midwives, and I certainly can't imagine a world without certified nurse midwives providing women services in hospital, in birthing centers. And as I said before, I'm hoping that, you know, there will be certified nurse midwives and CPMs opening birth centers in the near future. That I think a lot of us are hoping. I'm too old to do that, so I'm not going to be doing that. But I very much think that nurse midwives play a huge role in lowering the C-section rate is one thing we're talking about, and I think that they probably use you know, the water pools, you know, for labor quite a bit, maybe more often than physicians. I'm not sure about that. In hospital settings, I know water birth is becoming more and more popular, although it's certainly not new. Women have been seeking out water during labor and birth forever. But I've noticed in my practice that in the last 35 births I attended, 15 of those babies were born in water. And about 8 more people were in and out of the water and didn't actually deliver in water. And about 9 other people either chose not to or didn't have time to fill the pool, but were not involved with water. So there's a pretty good you know, percentage of women that are interested in
we don't have
in
much
laboring.
Sorry to interrupt you. We don't have much time left, but sure. I want to give Dr. Morrow a response on water. You are not a big fan. Is that right?
Again, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists and the American Academy of Pediatrics, how very timely, have just come out in March with a statement about water birth. My understanding is that water during the first stage of labor may allow a woman to be more comfortable and may have some benefits during the first stage of labor. However, there are no documented benefits for a fetus to be delivered through water. There's nothing natural about it. And the potential risk to the baby, and I can tell you I have cared for a number of babies who were incredibly sick because of massive aspiration with water delivery. I hate to be flippant, but that's how seals should be delivered, not humans.
All right. We are unfortunately running out of time. Jill, let's give the audience some information about how to find out more about options for home or birth center deliveries.
There are, of course, many resources online, including mana.org and MACPM.org is also a state association of CPMs. And I just want to comment that, you know, the statement that just came out against water birth was immediately countered by a statement from the American College of Nurse Midwives, who disagree that water is dangerous or has no benefits for newborns. So I think this is a discussion that we're going to be engaged in for a while.
It looks like the debate has not been settled in our program today.
No.
All right. Jill, Drs. Nalaboff and Morrow, thank you all for being here today. The conversation will continue.
Thank you, Keith.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jay Nalaboff is an OBGYN who practices at Franklin Memorial Hospital in Farmington. Jill Breen, a certified professional midwife and certified lactation counselor, and Dr. Doreen Morrow, an attending neonatologist at Maine Medical Center. Today's program was produced by our volunteer Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith. Cindy also answered your calls. Jonathan Woodward ran the board, and we had additional help from John Keimel, Rich Tozier, Nick Godfrey, Jennifer Rooks, and the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our podcast by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. You can also find our podcasts on iTunes. Tomorrow in the program, with winter now over, we hope, it's time to turn our attention to getting our home and property in shape for spring and summer. Get your home repair, remodeling, and landscaping questions ready for our panel of experts. We'll talk about spring home shape-up. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.